You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 29 May. My name is Simon Brown. I'm coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we chat to Nissen Nayar from Sasfin Securities, U.S.-China trade tensions, a risk to Naspers perhaps. Kurt Moore, he of the South African Liquor Brand Owners Association, reopening sales on Monday and managing that demand going forward. Brian Turner, partner at Spear Capital, bidding $100 million into an online fashion e-tailer. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. PRC proposes converting Eskom bonds into equity. Bloomberg, Trump says he'll announce China moves in Friday news conference. Morning markets, we got the US red, S&P off 0.2, Nasdaq off 0.5%. Asia also red, with Tokyo off 0.4 and Sydney down 1%. Commodities red, palladium and gold the exceptions, both slightly green. The rand 17.48 against the dollar, and top 40 opening call looking for about 0.3% weaker.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Nissen Nayar, he's a portfolio manager at Sasfin Securities. Nissen, appreciate your time this morning. I mentioned in the headlines Donald Trump doing a press conference around China later today, US time. Certainly some tensions heating up. We've got the trade wars, which obviously been going a while. Conflict or tension around COVID-19 and now Hong Kong. Could this potentially hurt Tencent, which would then spill into Naspers and Prosus, which remain significant parts of our index?
Yeah, good morning, Simon, and to the listeners as well. I think if you look at Tencent share price and even Naspers Prosus over the last week, you certainly get the impression that investors are not taking any chances when it comes to, you know, what might happen in Hong Kong. And I think what started off as a little bit of saber rattling, you know, Trump obviously taking a lot of stress over his handling of COVID-19 in the U.S., looking for someone to blame. You know, the Chinese were the obvious candidates.
Yeah.
And, you know, invariably it looks like we might be seeing remnants of, I don't know if you remember 15, 20 years ago, you know, the Cold War, 30 years ago, rather, the Cold War. I think we might be seeing something similar take place between the U.S. And China, which is worrying for stocks in that jurisdiction, particularly Tencent, which is one of the biggest shares.
Yeah, and there, I mean, you know, U.S., China, the two largest economies in the world, U.S. about a quarter, China maybe 15% of global economy. Kind of the globe needs those two to play nice with each other, frankly, particularly during a pandemic. Otherwise, there could be real economic implications.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the effort required to contain this pandemic has to be a global one. And I think most people agree that certainly from a healthcare perspective, there's a lot of collaboration between various companies. Really, some of the big companies, I think there's 100 companies that are working on a vaccine right now. And this might be the fastest produced vaccine ever in human history.
Yeah.
But of course, if we're sidetracked by geopolitical tensions between the U.S. and China, Trump's also come out now, you know, against Facebook and Twitter. You know, he seems to be wanting to change the headlines, change the narrative, you know, because I think a lot of people are quite angry at the fact that the pandemic hasn't really been well handled in the U.S. It's an election year for him as well. You know, he's got to find some quick wins. And I think, you know, that's what he's trying to do, but it's not helping. You know, the cause of this global effort to contain this pandemic.
Old Mutual with an update yesterday, half-year profit looking at 20% down. They've got a couple of challenges. Lockdown is preventing a lot of the products being sold. Staff and salespeople simply can't go out into the streets and sell the products. Confidence probably also hurting to a degree. Insurance broadly is going to be a tough space over the months and perhaps longer ahead during lockdown, during a pandemic.
Yeah, it's a very difficult industry. I mean, for one, We're seeing a spike in unemployment, and remember, insurance is really classified as a discretionary expense. It's not an essential expense for a lot of people. It might actually qualify as an essential expense, but a lot of people perceive it as discretionary. And, you know, what concerns me, even if you look at Tiger Brands numbers and Netcare's numbers, I mean, we're seeing numbers only to the end of March, and we're seeing a big contraction. we haven't even started to see the second quarter numbers, and I'm sure there's going to be tears in the eyes of investors when we do eventually go through those numbers. But, you know, one thing I'd like to mention, we deal with a lot of these insurers. We deal with Old Mutual, Sanlam, you know, a few of the big guys, Liberty. Some of them, you know, have reacted to the challenges that the pandemic, or the lockdown rather, presents to them being able to do business. And there's been some good innovations as well, you know. So I think it's going to put this sort of situation, particularly the lockdown, is really going to separate those businesses, you know, that can adapt very quickly to this new normal of doing business from the guys that are unable to react to it. And it'll be interesting to see in the months to come, you know, who's managed to get market share.
Yeah, I like that point. Also take your point. And we're looking at numbers to March. Lockdown only started 27 March. We haven't even begun to see nasty numbers. Quickly, before I let you go, and say, PSG, the spin-out of Capitec confirmed they're going to keep back a little bit. This is my sense. We get a lot of unbundlings to unlock value. Often they don't work. In this case, it really is going to, and we're going to get a PSG which will be different because it won't have that giant Capitec holding which dominated its sum of the parts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they. I think they're only going to end up with about 4% of Capitec. I suppose it was on the cut because, remember, you saw Barclays unwind APSA. You saw Old Mutual unwind Nedbank. You've got FirstRand now coming out of the Rand.
That's a good point.
So inevitably, this was going to be, and if you look at the discounts, it's enormous. I mean, a 20-30% discount is enormous value unlock for investors. And, you know, we saw what happened with Bidvest and Bidcorp. There was a big unlock of value there. In an environment where, you know, earnings are not growing and share prices are not going up, investors want to ensure that return is coming from somewhere. So, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Of course, PSG motivated on the basis that they didn't want to go through the regulation and the pain of having to, you know, become this big financial holding company. So that makes sense for them. Let's just hope that, you know, shareholders in PSG can get a good uplift from this unlock.
Yeah, and we hope so as well. And Nissen, he's a portfolio manager at Sasfin Securities.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Got Kurt Moore on the line. He's CEO of the South African Liquor Brand Owners Association. Kurt, morning. Appreciate your time. Your organization represents manufacturers, distributors in the liquor industry. The last 64 days of lockdown, zero sales. How have members held up? Have they managed to survive a zero income over just over 2 months?
Good morning. Yeah, good morning, Simon. Thank you for having me. Well, let's start by expressing our relief that we're allowed to start trading come Monday, 1st of June. It was a collaborative effort. We had discussions with, amongst others, the Beer Association, WinPro, representing the wine producers. And certainly for the first time that I'm aware of, we worked with Liquor Traders Association for retail, including taverners, to come up with a plan that we submitted to government to allow us to operate under level 3. But yeah, some damage has been done to the industry, and we'll have to start working together with government to try and, well, to deal with the concerns that government has about the spread of the disease that they have, and will be still some casualties.
We're going to get sales from Monday, as you say, level 3. Sales on Monday to Thursday, 9 to 5. No on-site consumption. There's going to be huge surge in demand. It's frankly going to be quite challenging for those retailers. I suppose the other question is, are they going to have stock in stores? Are your members able to deliver perhaps over the weekend? Because I imagine there was some sort of, you know, panic buying just ahead of lockdown, and we haven't seen delivery since then.
Yes, The agreement that we've reached, and it's included in the regulations, is that we can start deliveries from today, because mm-hmm. you're right, there was some panic buying before the lockdown, so some stock replenishment needs to take place, and that will happen over the weekend. And I think what has helped is that we have opened up more outlets. So you can see in the regulations, all license holders will be allowed to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Even taverners will be allowed to sell on an off-consumption basis, which means consumers will need to go down to their local tavern, purchase, and go home and consume. So because we've been able to spread out the number of outlets, even bars and restaurants will be allowed to sell on a takeaway basis.
Okay, they'll also, I hadn't realized that. Okay, so we actually got perhaps more capacity than we would normally have to buy for that off-site consumption. Even the usual on-site consumers will be able to sell you. Has there been much? I mean, certainly in the tobacco trade, we've seen massive illicit trade reports coming through saying, you know, perhaps as many as 90% of smokers are still smoking. Liquor, I suspend, aside from, you know, the people trying to become their own brew masters with varying degrees, I think, of lack of success, finding it a bit harder. Have you got a sense of much illicit trade happening during lockdown?
It's been very difficult to get the true value of illicit trade. Certainly our views, everything that has been sold during the lockdown has been illicit.
Sure.
We've made some estimates, and we assume it's around about 3.5 million that may have been sold during the lockdown. But very difficult to tell, yes.
What would be the average sort of sales during a normal month in the liquor industry? I'm trying to get a sense of, you know, we've lost 2 months of sales. What has that been? Because, of course, if I didn't have a bottle of wine last weekend, you know, I can't go back to last weekend and have that bottle. That sale is now lost. What is that quantum of lost sales over the lockdown?
Last year, 2019, our sales is 159 billion across the industry. So, you know, take 2 months out of that, and it has been a significant drop. And like you rightly say, those are lost sales. We will go into there'll be a surge now, as you rightly predicted. People will go out and buy. Certainly, our discussions with the retailers, they're relatively confident, especially the large retail, have to deal with issues such as, or have some experience dealing with issues such as Black Friday. But yeah, this is a totally different environment. Social distancing wasn't an issue when we had the last Black Friday sale. So it's something to adjust to. I think certainly in speaking to the taverners, we're busy with training programs over this weekend to help educate and create awareness around practicing social distancing and the related hygiene and workplace practices so that we can curb the potential spread of the virus.
139 billion a year, that's about 25 billion lost in liquor sales during the lockdown. The numbers are staggering, and they're just going to continue to stagger. That's Kurt Moore. He is CEO of South African Liquor Brand Owners Association. Appreciate your time this morning, sir.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Sitting with Brian Turner, he's a partner at Spear Capital. This came into my producer's inbox earlier in the week. Another 100 million investment, this time into South African e-commerce fashion retailer Runway Sale. I went to the site. Turns out I had an account. I'm maybe going to do some clothes shopping. Kurt, morning. Appreciate your time this morning. Was this deal sort of in the works ahead of lockdown, or perhaps accelerated because of lockdown?
Hi, Simon. No, this deal was in the works for quite some time prior to lockdown, and it largely had completed before the pandemic hit. Obviously, the pandemic created a few ripples in the water, so to speak, but the deal and the investment thesis was sort of held up before and it'll hold up after.
Certainly. I mean, what's happened in lockdown is we're seeing a significant change in how South Africans shop. I mean, pre-lockdown, our retail sales were 1% online, which is, you know, a staggeringly small number. The US is in sort of, you know, low double digit and moving into the 20s. Lockdown has seen that changed and almost certainly going to have a longer-term impact. As lockdown gets lifted, we've started to learn as a country to shop online, and we're going to probably come out at a higher base than that 1% retail sales. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, that is a fair comment. I mean, the whole a big piece of our investment idea was that the move to online was inevitable. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the global trends, e-commerce adoption rates, is, as you say, in the low teens in the US, probably at 30% in China, in the 20s in the UK. So South Africa, in all likelihood, just needed to follow. And all the pieces of the puzzle were in place. Logistics was there, payment security was there, data connection was all there. And it was really just the consumer adoption rate that wasn't there yet. And that's largely habitual because the South African consumer loves to shop in malls and go in and touch and feel the product. But as soon as they realize that they can get the benefits of scale from e-commerce, they would eventually migrate across. And what lockdown is going to have done and the pandemic is going to continue to do is it's just going to move that adoption rate that much quicker. We're starting to see higher traffic in the site. Consumers getting more and more comfortable shopping off their mobile, especially. Mm-hmm. And it'll probably just move the adoption rate forward a hell of a lot.
The one thing that struck me is yeah, this is clothing. Runway sells clothes. I've always kind of I've been an early adopter online and I do a lot of my shopping, but never clothing. My issue's been how do I fit it? If it doesn't fit, can I return it? But digging around into the US and Europe, particularly the US, clothing has actually really become a big area on the retail space and the fears around the fitting and the like have been resolved. In terms of returns, and it's actually a solid area as opposed to sort of the tech gadgets and the like, which is an easy win. Clothing is really picking up in the space.
Yeah, and also a benefit of Runway Sale is they sell brand clothing, so it's not their own brand that the consumer might not necessarily know. So if a polo shirt fits you in a medium now, it'll fit you in a medium of Runway Sale. And they've also got decent sizing charts and all that sort of stuff on the site. But another big appealing factor for us, of the company, is a good e-commerce site needs to have great customer service. And Runway Sales customer service, it's an industry leader in that space. So if you do have something that didn't fit or you didn't like and you needed to return, they've got the infrastructure to deal with that for you. But that returns are actually surprisingly low for this mm-hmm. for this company. And my feeling of it is it's probably because you're getting a great deal. It's a value retailer rather than a full price retailer.
Yep.
So it's sort of like your factory store online. So we feel that perhaps the consumer feels they've got too good a deal to return. Maybe they'll gift it to someone else or something. Okay.
Or they'll grow into it. I'm just wondering how many of our sizes have changed during that lockdown. A last question for you, Brian. Reading through your Spear Capital sort of processes, the one thing you talk a lot about is ESG, environmental, social, and governance. This is a big a point for you. And obviously, you're working the numbers and saying, if we invest into companies that have strong ESG policies, it actually makes for a better investment, a better return on your investment ultimately.
Yeah. Spear Capital invests in growth capital into private Southern African businesses that meet our ESG standards, or we can help to meet our ESG standards.
Mm-hmm.
And ESG isn't just a buzzword that it's a nice fluffy thing, in my opinion. If you've got a company that's got good corporate governance, that's going to filter through to the financials. If you've got a company that's got good environmental policies and good social policies, that's going to filter down into better stakeholder management and better relationships and a more sustainable business. So it's not just a fluffy buzzword, as I say. It's going to filter down to the real value for our investors and get to a commercial value for returns for our investors. And hopefully do a bit of good at the same time and move economies along.
And that's its purpose. Its purpose is not only to better profits, its purpose is also to actually do good for the country, for the economy, for the broader stakeholders. Brian Turner, partner at Spear Capital, talking about their $100 million investment into Runway Sail. That's it for today. That's it for the week. That's it for May. Another month gone. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app, and the podcast from 7 a.m. where all podcasts are being stored. Chat to us on social media. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening. My guests, producer Cordora, sound Boffinetti. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again on Level 3 Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.